Little bit of background. This is the western leafy vegetable cycle. They start out in the central coast, more commonly known as the Salinas Valley. It moves into the central valley, primarily Huron, and then it goes into the desert on both sides of the river in California and Arizona, although most of the production is actually on the Arizona side of the border. This is the region we're talking about. It's the low desert region. North of the Salton Sea is the Coachella Valley, south of it the Imperial Valley, and on the Arizona-California border is the Colorado River floodplain. There's about 600,000 acres of irrigated cropland, and lettuce is planted, lettuce, broccoli, cauliflower, spinach, etc. is planted from September 1st through the end of January each season. This is a typical production system. The crops are established by sprinklers. They take solicets in, they run the sprinklers, and then thereafter, it's principally irrigated by furrow irrigation. Gravity, everything's dead level, and we have a gravity conveyance system that water's channeled into these furrows. And this is the primary system, although there are exceptions. There's some season-long sprinkler, a little bit of drip, not very much. Overwhelmingly, this is the system we're working on. There is some challenges. We're using quite a bit of water. We have a leaching fraction, of course. There are inefficiencies in this gravity conveyance system. So we do have the potential for end leaching. And controlled release fertilizers is one strategy we've explored over the past decade for addressing this issue. Here's some of the various technologies we looked at over the years. One of the early ones was this sulfonated EPDM. This was made by Exxon of Canada. They sold it to Agrium. This was a little costly, was one of the problems. The other thing is it was very susceptible to catastrophic release. When soil temperatures were high, all the nitrogen would come out, and there were often crop failures associated with product. Of course, there's some others we've looked at. There's the Meister products, very good product, but costly. It's hard to pick up the margins to pay for that product. The ones that I've focused on of lately is these polyurethane products, and a number of companies make these. There's one that's Polyon. There's the Duration and ESN line, what I call the new Duration, to distinguish it from the old sulfonated EPDM. And then Simplot has some Galaxy. Again, very similar chemistry, but three different patents. The patents are given based on the manufacturing process, but these are virtually identical chemistries. Over the past decade, we've done a number of experiments on our university research farms in Yuma, Maricopa, even in Southern California. This is a typical plot area. I typically use four rows, take head plant samples from one, leaf samples from another, and leave two rows unscathed for the determination of marketable yield. You can see some suboptimal end treatments in the background. More recently, after decades of research, we would have the field base, the growers come look at the plots, they would say, this looks good, we need to try that. It never happened. In 10 years, I don't think we sold a gram of control-released fertilizer. So about 2 years ago, we changed strategies. We decided to strip these in grower fields. And actually, they've been buying quite a bit of product over the past year. So we're going to share some of this with you. And there are several plausible outcomes when you use control-release fertilizer. One plausible outcome, unfortunately, is you can get a reduction of yield. And there's two reasons for this. Oh, I went ahead and listed them all. One plausible outcome is you get no response to conventional end management. Another plausible outcome, is you get a reduction in the amount of N required for maximum yield. And, of course, in addition to that, you may also occasionally get improved yield. And quite often, surprisingly, we get a combination of both a reduction in the N required for maximum yield and improved final marketable yields. Reduction in yield. This can happen for two reasons. One is we mismatch the product with the N demand of the crop. We're using the wrong product that doesn't properly precede anticipated uptake. And we have a way to deal with this now, and I'll explain a little bit about that. But another problem is, under warm soil temperature conditions, you can get a catastrophic release, and you can actually get ammonia damage or osmotic damage to a crop. And we've come up with solutions to this. And this is particularly a challenge at one particular planting window for us, and I'll try to explain that. Here's an old study. This was iceberg lettuce. We simply compared sprinkler fertigated nitrogen to a controlled release, and here the product was mismatched. You can see the controlled release did not perform similarly to the chemigation strategy. Now, you got to step back and realize the best design control release product can only be as good as a well-managed chemigation system where you have a good algorithm and can apply product that coincides with the nitrogen flux of that crop. Of course, here's another. This is watermelons. And you can see that we did have products that released similarly to a drip irrigated chemigation system. So again, you've got to match the product with the crop and your control release. If you have the infrastructure for fertigation, your best design control release product can only do that good. Here's the temperature scenario we have. This is soil temperature in the desert. This is where I operate. And you can see we start planting, the soils are quite warm. And then they drop, and this takes us through our whole season again, September through March. Now here's the challenge we have in this window right here. This is a 20-year data average, but sometimes these high temperatures linger, and sometimes they dropped abruptly. So it's a bit of a challenge getting the right product for this early October, late September window, and I'm going to talk a bit about that. Now, we've developed some models. We use heat temperature units, and we use planting curves, historical planting curves. We have all these planting curves because we plant lettuce based on these curves. We anticipate market demand, and we'll plant so many acres September 1st. We'll plant so many September 2nd, so many September 3rd. So we have these data, and we reconcile it with our control release data. And this is some data for ESN. This is one season. Of course, this is several seasons. And I have a poster on this. I think it's 295. I use Polyon as the example. But we have a method where we can pick the right product for any one of our planting windows. So this is a way to avoid the mismatch. Now, catastrophic release is another challenge. And this was even in a grower's field. This was fall of 2012. We applied the lettuce over the bed, and then we power mulched it in. The temperatures lingered, the soil temperatures lingered, and we dinged up the lettuce. In fact, we had reduced yields compared to the grower standard practice this season. And again, it's that problematic window of early October. You can't simply change products. You can't say, well, I'm going to use a thicker-coated product, because the tempers do eventually drop, and that product won't release adequately during most of that season. So we address this product by going to a band application in this window. If we apply 2 or 3 inches below the seed and 2 inches to the side, we can avoid this potential damage to catastrophic release in this particular window. In fact, temperatures lingered again in 2013, the fall of 2013. We repeated this exact same lettuce experiment, and we actually got positive results. We simply, in that one window where you're not sure when your weather is going to break, we've gone to a band placement. Now, another possible outcome is no response. And this occurs where end management is already sound, and your leaching losses and denitrification losses are minimal. And I do encounter this scenario on our heaviest textured soils. On some of our clays and silty clay loams, we don't have much end loss, and there seems to be no economic advantage to using these products. Here's one such study. Here was pre-plant urea, pre-plant controlled release, side dress urea. You can see end losses were minimal, and there was clearly no advantage to the pre-plant controlled release compared to a split application. Now, it costs about $20 an acre every time we put a tractor in a field, and you might try to see if that works out economically. Typically, it does not. If you're just saving one trip through the field, it doesn't pencil out the cost of the product. Now, another possible outcome is you need less fertilizer for optimum yield, and sometimes you get improved yield, and sometimes you get a combination of the two. And here's one example where we simply largely got a reduction in the amount. This is a lettuce experiment. This is a silty clay loam. This was pre-plant AN20. This was site split application AN20, and this was a controlled release. And you could see we could reduce the amount of N at which we got maximum marketable lettuce yield. This was an El Nino year, and we couldn't get in side dress. And when we did, it was late. And, of course, we got a linear response to N, and the controlled release far outperformed the split application. And this was simply because it rained continuously. It was El Nino year, and we couldn't get in the field with a tractor. And here, it was a clean win for the controlled release. And we can go on and show more positive data. Here was some cauliflower, and here's the side dress urea. And this was a sandy loam, and we just couldn't split. We just couldn't keep up because of the irrigation inefficiencies. And one point I want to make, broadcast ban, nitrogen moves by mass flow. So for the most part, it makes no difference if you broadcast or ban. I only recommend ban on that problematic early October window when the temperature may not break for 2 or 3 weeks. Similar data, again, two different control release products. And again, we outperformed the traditional side dress urea application. Now, in many scenarios, we find that a mixed program is the best. Here's some data that I collected at the Research Center back in 1998, and we looked at a 100% CRM program and a 75, a 50, 25, and the rest side dress. And you can see in many cases the mixed program is better, and the mixed program often will pencil out more often, maybe because it costs less to buy that product. Here's a summary of a number of studies we've done over the years. I've put them in soil texture here. I put the crop there. I put the frequency of the response. And as we're on these real heavy soils, controlled release fertilizers often don't pencil out because we don't have an end management problem there. As the soils become increasingly coarse, it becomes a clear win almost all the time, simply because logistically you can't go into a field, a loam or a sandy loam, and side rest often enough to stay ahead on the end demand. Now, more recently, we've been stripping in growers' fields. This is one piece of equipment. I go in and I use the growers' equipment, and I have to calibrate it. If they have a Clamco, it may take me 2 hours to calibrate, playing with tractor speed and hydraulic speed. This one doesn't. This one, and I didn't believe them. They told me just weigh the density of the fertilizer. You set the controls. It uses ground radar to correct. And I didn't believe them, so I do mass balance in and out. And they're right on. This is easy to use, and it puts the right amount of fertilizer very accurately within 3%, and my mass balance is 4-5% off. So you can see that this is one way to do it. Of course, this particular experiment was for romaine hearts in the Coachella Valley. That's the Salton Sea in the background. And then we power mulch it in. That's okay. We've been past 2 years, we've switched entirely to on-grower farm demos. Typically, what we do is we do their program. I may do 90% their program, and I maybe do 70% their program. And again, more often than not, if our soils move into that loam texture range and even coarser, we win. It's a clear win. We're getting higher yields at 70% in the end on the coarser texture soils, loam and above. On clays, sometimes we still get a win, sometimes we don't. But that's the short story. I guess I'll answer any questions. Yes, sir.
On the on-farm demo, that machine you had, which is really slick.
Yeah.
It puts the fertilizer right to the very edge.
You can put it to the edge. You can broadcast it. You can band it. You just make a few adjustments before you make your application. What? No. We already have a bed. You go in with a power mulcher and work that fertilizer into the bed. And the reverse power mulchers are better. They go deeper.
Okay. And there's enough of a shoe there that's not going to spill out.
Yeah. We deal with heavy... So our soils have a lot of silt. So power mulching is a common practice. We're not asking the growers to do an extra practice when we do this. Any other questions? Yes, sir.
If you use fertigation, do you think we still need to use the control release fertilizer?
When you use what?
Fertigation.
You know, if you have a good algorithm and you have infrastructure to spoon feed, control release can only be that good. If you don't have that, and 95% of my stakeholders don't have that, control release is the way to go. But if you have a drip system and you have a good algorithm where you can feed and anticipated of flux, the best control release can only do that good. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, thank you.
Yes, sir.
So what's the mechanism When we power mulch that in, we have it really 2 or 3 inches deep. And it all comes out at once, and you have that ammonia off-gassing, and you ding up the crop. If you band it and move it away, it's concentrated here, and when you irrigate, the water goes there, and you don't get that catastrophic off-gassing near the lettuce seedling. It's not all the fertilizer you apply. It's the 1 or 2 or 4 or 5 granules that are right near the seedling.